Hello, we are broadcasting live, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And we are on the road today, or rather one of our guests is. So we'll hear some background highway noise, as well as many bullets going out and blank shotgun shells from the Jade Helm exercises that are going on across the United States. My very special guests, nonetheless, are Paul Tepetti and Trevor Labonte. Why does everybody have like a strange pronunciation with the E on the end of their name, and people get it confused for sometimes? It's just a crazy thing. Anyway, guys, welcome to the program. And of course, the band that we're talking about today is Poker Face, and it's poker as in, you know, the game that you're playing, not poker as in something you do with the ribs when your wife is ordering something really, really expensive at the restaurant. Guys, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Manny. How's it going, brother?
Well, my standard response is that I'm somewhat fabulous.
Nice. It's been a while since we talked, man. It's good to hear you again.
It has been a while indeed, and since that time, I have changed, you know, who I am radically, as we all should, within the various months and years that go through our life. In fact, the person you are from year to year shouldn't be recognizable.
Nice. Hey, man, you're turning into a musician, man. I love it.
I love it, too, because there's something really enjoyable about being on the microphone and singing and entertaining people. You know, it just feels good. It's kind of like like you're generating good vibes that get sent around a circle and then come back to you through the audience sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Just a little bit, bro. I've only been doing it since I was like five, man, and I think Trevor about the same, right, buddy?
Yeah, that's right. Seven.
So it's nothing new for us, my friend.
Yeah, well, I was just wondering if that's the dynamic that you do, because I go into things when I'm very new and have no experience, but I make a lot of assumptions and presumptions based upon my observations that may get corroborated or discredited with years of experience.
Well, the best thing about it is try it, and, you know, if it feels good, continue it, man. And obviously, you're seeing the crowd reaction, so just go with it, man.
Same principle as marijuana, then. If you enjoy it, just keep doing it, and if it's got a good reaction, there's nothing wrong with it.
Amen, man.
The thing about truth-oriented music is that the public is, whether they know it or not, is starving for it right now, and... Because, you know, art is really not worth anything if you can't make it into a vehicle for truth. And that's why I think Poker Face is so great. And they've got, we're working on releasing their sixth album right now. And it's all, they're the only band I can think of that really, really goes against the grain and lays it all out there and explains who the enemy is. And they're just more than a breath of fresh air to me.
Well,
and they sound.
I'd hate to correct you, but there's... Here's the thing. The music industry is about business. You know, it's not about music anymore. We know this. It's been corrupted by the New World Order scumbaggery. Now, as a result, there are people who are making music all over the world in all different places that nobody's ever heard of, because they're not the kind of people who would sign their life away to a record label and do the soulless thing that some musicians do and let the lead singer divide the band, break up everything. Same thing that happened to Van Halen and a number of other really great acts who are truly independent before they get signed to big labels, and this whole spectacle starts coming out, and then the egos come in, not because they're
right.
Just there waiting to strike. It's because they get fed by the people who are financing your gigs.
You're right, they're out there, they're just not on the big labels, and all I know is that they came after me and attacked me viciously when I started exposing truth, and I wasn't even that famous, you know. I was in a band that...
Trevor, tell my story, man, how we met and what happened to you there in Austin.
Well, so I live in Austin, and I was well established here, gigging every single night, sometimes playing two or three gigs, and I started to do research into 9/11, and I quickly discovered that Israel's fingerprints are all over it, and then I started looking into this Holocaust issue. And I couldn't believe that there's no proof at all for it happening. It's just a bunch of phony eyewitness testimonies from a show trial. And I started exposing this stuff just on Facebook, and a group of fanatical Zionists from my town went in on a hate campaign, and they terrorized everybody in my town that hired me. And I will say that I was one of the more established guitar players here in the jazz idiom, as well as in the pop and country idiom, and I played with all kinds of, you know, I'm a little different than Paul, whereas, you know, Paul has his band that has always been his vision, and he's started, you know, he's been doing that, and for me, I've been doing this sideman thing where I could find myself in 10 or 15 different bands at once, and I was blacklisted, and these Orwellian terrorists went and all the people that I was playing with, and all the places, all the venues where I was playing, they would call. And Paul reached out to me, actually, and he lent me a hand, and he came to Austin and brought me in on this truth convention, and I got to meet him and Michael Collins Piper, and I put together a little band, and to back up Paul, and we learned 5 or 6 Poker Face songs and played them at Brave New Books, and Paul just gave me a lot of upward mobility in this thing that we call the truth movement, and I just got back from staying at his house a couple days ago, and consider him a dear brother, and I know that the other musicians are still too terrified to try to talk to me or anything, but I got Paul, and I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, well, there's this element in the music industry, which is this, I would like to call it competing rather than cooperating with musicians. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There is that, but what happened with him was, when you start to wake up and you start talking truth, you're going to start talking about the Jew and his control of the music industry, control of our country, control of our money, control of the colleges. And what happens is all the little Satan and minions within each locality are there to try to shut you up and shut you down. And they were doing that to Trevor, and Trevor was hanging out there all by himself. He wasn't getting support from anybody. My girl saw that. She turned on the Trevor's plate, and I went down there for to speak for an American Free Press Truth and History Convention with Tex Mars. And while I was down, I was like, look, brother, you need to know that you're not alone. There's a lot of great minds that think like you. You just need to be exposed to them and be brought into the family, because we're on the good side. We're on the right side. And all those demons that are trying to eat out your substance are just that. They're just demons. And they're there to try to bring you down because they don't want people to be good examples of what the truth is. Trevor's a good man. He's a very humble man. He's a very gifted man. He doesn't brag. He doesn't have an ego like most musicians do. And he can play his ass off better than most musicians I've met in my life. And he's one of the most humble guys that you'll ever meet, dude. So it's been a blessing all around, and we're just continuing to find good acts. Like The Tank is another great band out there. Secret System is another phenomenal one. They kind of sound like Pink Floyd. So there are younger bands or bands that are doing it, but they're not going to get into the Jews media. They're not going to get the promotion. They're not going to get the backing, because if you're going to talk truth, they're going to censor you if you're going to sign.
Well, either that or the opportunities just don't come up to you in the first place. And also, right, even those people who aren't deliberately conspiring or whatever, they see you criticizing people like them in their jobs, and they go, well, I'm not going to get this guy a record label. I don't care how good he sounds. He's insulting me, you know, thinking that insulting the controllers behind the establishments means that you're insulting them because they believe that they're still a part of it. And right, one of the other elements that I found was particularly interesting is the element of choice. You have a choice about these two different paths to success, right? And I think it's like most people don't actually get to success because they don't really want to fully commit to either one or the other in some cases. Is number one, if you go out from the mainstream and you know for a fact you're going to suddenly lose all your mainstream audience. You know, it sounds perfectly reasonable. It's a good assumption, because that's precisely what's has a track record of showing to happen. This is true across almost all spectrums of entertainment, regardless of whether you're a filmmaker, music maker, or candlestick maker. If you speak out against the New World Order, no more encouragement for you. So the one thing that's very, very different now, and this is the other route that we're talking about, is you have a look at, say, for example, steampunk bands and another of very underground movements, death metal, etc., very isolated, non-mainstream music genres. The only way that those bands actually have enough money to survive and have enough of a following is because they didn't go for big fame all of a sudden. They worked their way up and they got a solid fan base, so that at any point when they do become mainstream and then say something they don't like and lose their mainstream audience, the band doesn't get completely destroyed because they've got that fan base, they've got that support, they've got that minimum income that they've need to support themselves in order to continue their craft. And I think that a lot of truth of musicians really need to start banking on that route, because people are waking up like never before about the control system and everything that is conspiring to corrupt the truth movement itself and all of our expressions in art. And I think that it's the other people in this world who realize that, who don't have a lot of money, who do crowdsourcing, come to gigs, things of that nature, and a collective kind of financing and a good, decent little fan base builder should be right up the alley of a lot of good people.
Well, most of the death metal bands are too busy bashing Christ to bother trying to expose 9/11 truth, and the simple truth is that Israel did it. Poker Face has an album that when you open up the jacket, it's a big fold out that gives you all of this all the information you need to research to understand how Israel did 9/11. And I still have never heard of any punk bands or death metal bands that talk about that. And in my case, I was a little naive when I started out trying to publicize the truth. I didn't know that people were going to be so terrified of the information that I was bringing out. I mean, they're completely petrified and won't even list off Israel as a suspect in 9/11, even though they were caught with driving vans loaded with tons of explosives and caught recording the attacks on a camera on a tripod before the first plane hit. They were dancing and celebrating when the rest of the country was in shock and thought that it was a terrible accident. So, freedom of speech extends to a certain amount, but it doesn't cover you anymore when you start talking about the real perpetrators of 9/11 or the real story of the Second World War.
It doesn't really matter to people what the real truth is. What matters is, have I got food on my table? Have I got a roof over my head? Unfortunately, though, the food on their table and the roofs over their heads are being taken away piece by piece very, very slowly, so they don't even notice that soon enough the table's going to be empty and there won't be no roof, and they're going to be out on the street.
Right, they don't care about their fellow man because they're too busy being selfish. That's the New World Order paradigm. You only care about yourself and you don't...
I don't know, bro. Like that might be true from afar when you look at somebody who's like 10,000 miles away, 100 people die or something. Most people don't care, right? Not part of your life. But almost everybody, if they see somebody who's hurt in front of them and then the assailant runs away, a lot of people will suddenly stop exactly whatever they're doing to come and help you. And that happened right after 9/11, didn't it? The whole country just kind of came together. And that
the whole bunch came together to go after all the wrong people because they're being brainwashed by the Jewish controlled media, and they believe that must
again
9/11.
Again, that's from a distance, and that's what the controllers do. But when it's person to person, when it's right there, people were hugging each other in the streets, crying on total strangers' shoulders. You know, like that's what we really react like when we're given the direct choice, when we're not told to behave a certain way. We care about each other, but when we're looking at it on and on TV and we're having it read to us by the news, we become really hateful. We basically really don't see our adversaries as human anymore.
You're right, and I do believe in the goodness of human nature, or I wouldn't be doing this. However, there are certain people that wake up faster than the other ones, and that's who I try to wake up first are the ones that are ready for the truth. And then, you know, but isn't it interesting, Vinny, that when people thought Muslims did 9/11, everyone was out in the streets shooting their guns and at the sky and wanting to attack at any country that where this Al-Qaeda entity was supposed to be hiding. But then the second that you realize that it might be the neocons and Jews and Israelis, then all of a sudden the room goes deathly quiet. And I can attest to this, man, because I had 1,500 friends in Austin that I played with all the time that really respected me as a musician, and they're in an utter panic right now over the things that I have been saying. And this panic would not be occurring if it was Cherokee Indians or Eskimos or Aborigines that did 9/11, but it wasn't. It was the Jews. And so all of a sudden, everyone's tail goes between their legs, and they can't even say the J word. That's how what kind of Orwellian terror scheme that we live under in a daily basis.
See, me personally, I don't use the Jew word because, first of all, people don't understand what a Jew is. It's like a Catholic. It's a religion, and there's like all these different tribes and everything. Secondly, categorizing an entire what people think of as race into exactly one category and say that this one category of everybody, you know, like the projection comes on and people think, oh, he means every single person when they're Jewish. As soon as they get their foreskin cut off, they become inducted into this conspiracy of how to enslave the goy. That's so crazy, you know, like people don't understand what is meant by it, because when you're using words that are loaded terms, right, you need to generally define exactly what you mean, exactly what you don't mean, and exactly what the misconceptions could possibly be to head them all off so that nobody can misinterpret what you say.
Well, let me define what I mean then, because Jews are not a race. They're an ideological collective. So when they leave this supremacist ideological collective, they announce that they are no longer Jews. See, being Jewish is a choice. It's not like a race, like black, where you can't change your race, but you can change your belief system. And the one thing, you know, you realize that like 80% of Jews are not even religious, right? So the one thing that ties them all together is they have to believe in their own chosenness, their own supremacism. Basically, they're an ideological collective of moral relativists, and they believe that the Gentiles are animals that are here to serve them. And I also noticed they have a real problem telling the truth about 9/11, the Holocaust, or the JFK assassination, or the supremacist nature of their religion. They lie about it constantly. You know, ask any Jew, and they'll start wringing their hands and get really nervous if you ask them that if they believe that the Goyim are their slaves. You know, they and then in their own writings, they talk all about their directive to rule the world. And, you know, if people would just look at their own words and see that this is them, they're the ones that call themselves Jews. I didn't make up that word. And what does it mean to be a Jew? Well, it means to side with the other Jews against the Gentiles. There's a war. It's Gentiles versus Jews, and the Jews are the enemy. Period.
And you're talking about a very
nicely.
Yeah.
If you want to sit and haggle over the 2 or 3% of them that supposedly are against Zionism or whatever, it's just a waste of time, because in the end they're all on the same team, because that's what it means to be Jewish.
Okay. Now let's define precisely what you don't mean. That's what you do mean. What do you not mean?
What do I not mean by Jews? Okay, well, I'm not attacking them on any kind of ethnic or religious or racial grounds. I don't even have to talk about Jews. What I talk about, what I focus on, if you want to avoid all that bullcrap that they try to put you through, is you focus on the ideology of Jewish supremacism. Now, if you can find one single example of any Jewish secular or religious intellectual that explains why Gentiles are humans and why they should be treated as equals, then I'm all ears. But I happen to know that it doesn't exist. All for thousands of years, all we've gotten from them is this continuous supremacist hate screed about how the Goyim are animals and how we, you know, worship Jesus, who is the son of a whore, who is burning in hell and being boiled in excrement.
And we're there to serve them.
And all this evil shit and that they say. But yeah, so it's got absolutely nothing to do for me with their race or their ethnicity or anything. They are an ideological collective, and if they want to leave it, they should do like my friend Gilad Atzman or brother Nathaniel or Benjamin Friedman and renounce their supremacist Jewish identity and join the human race for real.
I also kind of think about the with us or against us, and you mentioned the 3% who are against Jewish supremacy. When I think there was something like a 4 or 8 million man protest held in Israel against Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, and it added up to nearly 50% of the entire population of the country were literally in the streets. So it seems to me like every religious ideology has the same objective, to take over the world and convert everybody to their point of view, because they've got the one truth. So if you have a look at for example, the learned elders of Zion, it's exactly the same kind of real nasty world dominating, everybody's dehumanized compared to our sort of ideology.
That's Jewish ideology, the protocols of the elders of Zion, right?
Exactly.
I'll point out, these people that are out in the streets that are protesting in Israel are not necessarily good people. A lot of them protest Israel's policies because they find them inhumane. They're against the quote-unquote apartheid. But what people need to remember is that they shouldn't be in that land in the first place. There is no justification for to build a racist Jewish state on top of Palestine. And the notion that Palestinians and Israelis can exist in peace with one another ignores the fundamental problem, which is that murderers and victims cannot live in peace together. It's absurd, the notion that there should be this Jewish state, and that its only problem is this that it occupies the West Bank, and so basically what they want is the ones that want to end the occupation of the West Bank just view that as the final step in the process of legitimizing the theft of Palestine. It's something that I don't take kindly to whatsoever, and it doesn't make them heroes to me at all. If they want to be heroes, like I said, they can pronounce their
Paul, you're Paul, do you have something to say then?
Yeah, I was just going to basically back up everything that Trevor's been saying about, you know, the Jews are not a religion. It's an ideology of sociopsychopathy on how to treat others inhumanely and the racialist supremacist views. And they do practice moral relativism. If it feels good, you fuck it. It doesn't matter if they have to kill you to get what's yours, if they have to lie about you to get what's yours, or threaten that this is the last generation of white babies to be born, whether it's rabbinical or secular leaders saying this. Okay, so
basically they have the exact same ideology as the U.S. government.
Well, they're the source of the ideology of the U.S. government.
Yeah, Paul, can you mute, please? It's really disruptive, and you're breaking up when you're talking. Can you mute there, Paul, please?
Yeah, all British and American and white European exceptionalism actually is Jewish at its root, and all of these movements were created by the Jews because they know that any time they can get anyone to drink their supremacist Kool-Aid, that person can become a tool for them. So they tell you that America is an exceptional country, and that you know, we're necessary. It's necessary for us to go around the world and kill millions of people in the name of peace. And of course, the cornerstones of the monuments and capitals in this country were laid by Freemasons, and Freemasonry is a secret society of Jewish supremacists that believe in a new world order. At least at the top degrees know this, and the lower degrees don't know what they're doing. They're just stupid Gentiles that are tools for the Jews without even knowing it. But you know, that this is the basic philosophical difference between Christianity and Islam versus Judaism. It all comes down to a philosophical battle.
Can I note I was interviewing Dr. Kevin Barrett about this, the difference between Muslims, Christians and Jews, and the difference is usury. Christians don't like it, Muslims don't like it, Jews don't like it, but if you're a Gentile, they don't have a problem with usury. They don't have a problem with charging you interest, but they don't loan money to other Jews with interest, or at least that's the cornerstone of the religious belief.
Exactly, and usury is their mechanism for controlling the world, but there is still a deeper underlying philosophical difference, which is that Jews do not believe in the golden rule. They don't believe in treating others the way they were treated, the way they want to be treated. They believe in treating other Jews the way that they want to be treated, but it really comes down to the golden rule. If you think that if you think other people should be treated the way that you want to be treated, then you are with the Christians and you're with the Muslims and you are by default against Judaism and Jewish supremacism. You won't find anywhere any Jew saying that Gentiles are equal value to the Jews. This is why Jesus called them a brood of vipers. He was very explicit. He explained that these people were of their father, the devil. They behave like demons because they don't have any common decency, because they don't believe in a golden rule for all of mankind. They're not part of a universal moral system for humanity. They're out for themselves. And all of their writings, if you just study what they write, will back up what I'm saying.
Now, also, what I wanted to talk about was the Holocaust, or the Holo hoax, as it's somehow known. And it's quite interesting. The Red Cross did report that there were a significant amount of, you know, what they called ethnic Jews at the time, which was a popularist thing done by Adolf Hitler to say that Jews were a race, and, you know, you could tell who was who by the width of their nose and all of that kind of thing. And incidentally, the so-called Jews that they rounded up didn't happen to be the extremely wealthy elite Jews. Isn't that interesting? And it turns out that they were getting financed by them. And so all the little people of their own ilk who kind of don't prey on others kind of got a little bit exterminated. But according to the Red Cross, there was like 250,000.
Yeah, 271,301 is the total number of deaths in all of Germany's camps, and the camps were just labor camps. The deaths in them were due to actually Allied bombing. It's pretty ironic, Vinny, that they're saying that the Germans were using Zyklon B to exterminate the Jews, when Zyklon B is a commercially produced disinfectant with one purpose, which is to kill lice, which were spreading typhus. So you see these pictures of thousands of people. They're from the camp Bergen-Belsen, where they all ended up concentrated in the last few weeks of the war. But because the Allies bombed all of the supply line and there was no food or water or medicine for anybody, those are the victims of Allied atrocities that were blamed on Germany in the Nuremberg trials, which is nothing but a show trial that was, even if you read Articles 19 and 20 of the Nuremberg Charter, it says that the trial will not be bound to the technical rules of evidence. So they're throwing the rules of evidence out the window, and any person that actually reads the transcript of the trial will see that it's like a Superman comic book or something. That's how ridiculous it is, the things that they're blaming on the Germans, the things that this trial supposedly proves, like that the Germans vaporized 20,000 Jews with atomic energy that they didn't even have, that they were steaming Jews like lobsters in steam chambers that were never found, that they were electrocuting Jews on giant electrocution platforms. They were making soap and lampshades and book bindings and riding breeches and driving gloves. And it's completely ridiculous. Even Steven Spielberg on his worst day couldn't come up with something that's just so utterly ridiculous and full of lies. And I'm also going to quickly assert my opinion here. I respect your opinion about Hitler supposedly being financed by the Jews. I believed that for about a week, and then I started to research it, and I found
that actually it was financed by the Americans.
Well, that's what they try to say, that it was the Rockefellers and Bushes and Harrimans. But I'll just make this real quick, brother, because this can turn into quite a discussion. But the bottom line for corporations is it's all profit driven. So it had nothing to do with supporting Hitler. It had everything to do with just having normal trade relations for two countries that are not at war with one another. And the idea that Wall Street would finance Hitler into power is ridiculous, because Hitler made usury punishable by death. And every Jew on the planet was terrified of him for that. And they would have never financed him. But there is a large disinformation campaign aimed at people that are awake to the atrocities of Israel. And then they want to find out what exactly Hitler's deal was. Was he on the side of these Zionists or not? And some people say that he was. I say, hell no, he wasn't. He was expelling Jews. There's this transfer agreement that they had, which is woven into this big conspiracy theory. Oh, the Bushes and Harrimans and all these people.
But Prescott Bush was... Yeah, but Prescott Bush was charged under the Trading with the Enemy Act, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was after the fact, but I mean...
So he got charged after he committed the crime, therefore the crime didn't happen? You know, so.
It's just a common sense thing that these people would have never supported Hitler, and the only, let's take for example the book that people almost always cite when they want to get into these conspiracy theories about Hitler is Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler by Anthony C. Sutton, which is published by the Hoover Institute. And Sutton, if you actually read the book, he doesn't make his case in it, and he just lays out this weak. I mean, it really comes down to this: business was just business. These corporations were trying to make a profit. They were definitely not fans of Hitler.
Well, can I give an example to back that up? Coca-Cola, realizing that it was illegal to trade and sell Coca-Cola with the Germans under the Trading with the Enemy Act, they created a company in Germany called Fanta that produced an orange soda so they could still make money. Not to mention, there's also a whole lot of footage of Coca-Cola getting taken in by the Germans anyway, and even in the... desert campaigns in northern Africa, the German pilots would wet a towel, wrap it around a bottle of Coke, stick it in their plane's wing, and then fly around for a little bit, come back down, and ice water formed, and they can have a ice cold Coke in the middle of the desert. I've seen the footage. Quite interesting, isn't it? Business knows no bounds, and this is the interesting part about it, is because it doesn't matter who I've found or what their beliefs are, because business seems to override everything. Oh, are you killing a whole bunch of people? Yeah. Well, at least as we'll get our profits. Are you taking away a whole bunch of people's civil liberties and rights to speak out against the government and asking people for their papers everywhere they work and really kind of just making a big socialist nightmare out of it? Yeah. Well, as long as we make a profit, it's all good.
But the Germans loved Hitler. He had a 95% approval rating, and it's not due to coercion.
So did Chairman Mao, and Chairman Mao exterminated like 80 million minimum.
Chairman Mao was given $20 million by the Rothschilds to spread Jewish communism throughout China, though, and whereas Hitler was a populist leader who was elected by his people. And I just, you know, all of the evidence points to him just being an honest German, and the German NSDAP Germany was not a repressive place. I mean, if you look at any picture from taken within it, every person in the picture is smiling from ear to ear. They love their leader, and he.
So you reckon it's a big media
nightmare? He was not a dictator at all. He only assumed this. He created this enabling act just so he could nix the Weimar Constitution, and he was a hero to his people, and the reason that he was they were never persecuting Jews. The problem was that, you know, 85%...
What about Kristallnacht?
Of the 85% of the communist commissars were Jews, and they killed 66 million Russians. Those were the problem, and Hitler was trying to safeguard Europe from them, and Germany was not a repressive place. All they wanted to do was expel the Jews because they were totally involved in communism, and they had overtaken entire German cities, including Berlin, communist red partisans in the streets, killing people, dragging people out of their houses. It was a total fucking nightmare, and they had turned Berlin into this complete cesspit of depravity where there was 100,000 prostitutes on the street every night. Mother-daughter combos, you name it, man. And Germany needed to be saved. Hitler was the man they elected. He wasn't any kind of Rothschild agent, and he had nothing to do with the British royalty or any of that stuff. These are all what I discovered, you know, when I started researching him, is that there is about 10 times more lies about Hitler than there are about any other person in the world. But anyway, I don't want to conflict with you. I just wanted to assert the findings of my research on Hitler, which was that he was a populist, and he lived his life to serve his people, and he doesn't deserve any of these conspiracy theories that he would that the Rothschilds were backing him. And I looked into that conspiracy theory. Did the Rothschilds back Hitler? No, they actually tried to back his opposition within the party. And then another person that's quoted or that's alluded to a lot that supposedly financed Hitler is this guy named Sidney Warburg. Now, if you look up Sidney Warburg, what you'll find out is the man didn't fucking exist. There is no person named Sidney Warburg. So people make up these lies because they don't want people to know that Adolf Hitler wrote the blueprint to smash the New World Order into a million pieces. And the secret behind it is the labor treasury note. He created a system of currency that's backed only by labor. He was influenced by the economist Gottfried Feder, who showed how stock market speculation and these other things are like parasitical activities, that and that labor is the source of all value. So that when Hitler was elected, there was about 50% unemployment in Germany, and it went down to under 2% within a couple years because of this system that Hitler created. And here they built the Autobahn. People were driving Volkswagens for 5 Deutschmarks per week, when just a couple years before that, it was 4 or 10 billion Deutschmarks just to buy a loaf of bread under the Weimar regime. So they went from that to success and to being one of the most powerful country in Europe under Hitler. And this is why the international Jews had to snuff out Hitler. He was never their boy. They had to snuff out his revolution before it went global, because the rest of the world was stuck in economic depression and manufactured famines by the globalist Jewish bankers. And here Hitler's country was exploding with prosperity during the exact same time. So you can see that was quite an embarrassment for the international Jews.
And that's all because he created the what was it, the labor-backed currency, and had nothing to do with the alleged trillions of dollars that were given by American businesses who set up shop in Germany and revitalized the economy after the Great Depression had destroyed it?
It was Hitler that revitalized the economy, and I mean, it was the German people that did that. You can't give credit to the American corporations for doing that. And
so no financing of any kind from America went to Germany during the stage of its restructuring, rebirth, and subsequent being led by Hitler?
Not according to my research, brother.
Okay, all right. I'll take that one down, not to contradict you. And on top of that, there's the other elements that we've got here is the Reichstag fire. Did it happen or did it not?
There was a fire, but the Germans had already prosecuted a mentally unstable Jew. I forget his name at the moment, but the source of the story about Hitler burning down his own Reichstag is not true. It comes from the Nuremberg trials, of course, which is where the Holocaust story itself comes from. So no, I do not believe that Hitler would burn down his own Reichstag, nor do I believe that he committed a false flag in Gliwice, Poland. These are just stories that the victors of the Second World War made up later to try to make Hitler look like a dictator. And we know who specializes in false flag attacks. It's the Jews.
So Hitler wasn't a dictator. Did he have free elections where other people and other parties were free to run against him?
And yeah, he was so popular
after he became chancellor.
Look, Putin right now is at about 89% approval rating. Hitler was at 95. These people were unbelievably popular. And one thing that really helps drive it home is for people to understand that the people that were in Danzig and in Sudetenland and Austria and the Tsarland, which were the regions of Germany, which were amputated off by the Jewish bankers in the Treaty of Versailles. These people all voted 99%+ in internationally supervised referendums to join the Reich.
So if Paul's back.
So if Hitler was such a dictator, then how did he get all of these people in other countries that were not under his jurisdiction to vote to join him? 99%+ to rejoin the German Reich, which they're a part of 15 years before that.
So are you suggesting it's impossible to get the majority of people to support a dictator?
In other countries? Think about that. Someone that's in another country is going to support you 99.5 you know, 5%. It debunks all of the theories.
I don't know. There's in New Zealand, for example, you have like 90% of people who support Barack Obama, who has technically dictatorial powers as well. As far as I know, being a dictator comes down to one thing. Can you convince people that they're free and still be a dictator? And you can, easily. Especially if you've got a Ministry of Propaganda and Public Enlightenment headed by Joseph Goebbels, who's probably one of the most talented marketing people of the time.
Well, I challenge anyone to go through any of Joseph Goebbels' writings or speeches and find anything that he's saying is not true. It's either, propaganda doesn't have to be lies, and German propaganda was based on truth, which I was surprised because my whole life I was taught that it was that they were these brilliant propagandists, that they made everyone believe in these big lies. But then I started to read what they're actually saying, and they're talking about the Rothschilds, they're talking about the Freemasons, they're talking about the New World Order, Judaism, all these things. And it was a truth movement, and it was probably the best truth movement the world has ever seen still to this day. They had not only the Germans awake, but most of Europe. And, you know, like one thing that you're not supposed to talk about is the Waffen-SS, the fact that they were not that they started in Germany but grew into a continental force of 1 million-plus volunteers.
A communist.
You know?
Well, let's not forget that Erich von Manstein was Hitler's master strategist, and Hitler's bodyguard, Emil Morris as well, Rudolf Hess, which was Hitler's deputy, Eckhard Milch, his chief of the Air Force, Theodor Moral, which was Hitler's personal physician, as well as thousands of German officers and soldiers, right? And this came out not too long ago in the University of Kansas Press called Hitler's Jewish Soldiers. So for somebody who's so, you know, anti-Jewish, he seemed to have an awful lot of people of their ilk working for him.
Brother, they're trying to muddy the issue because these people obviously, when you actually read those books, what it says is that these are people that had Jewish ancestors. And like I said,
It's an ideology, not a race.
It's an ideology. So what the deal was that Hitler was willing to let these people... he was willing to trust these people that they could be nationalistic Germans primarily and let their Jewish identity fall somewhere behind that. So if you can be primarily a German nationalist, then there is no problem with you.
Yeah. Well, just based upon that little list of people, you can tell that Jews are not a race. It's an ideology. Otherwise, Hitler would have never employed them if he was actually anti-Jewish in the first freaking place, which he probably clearly isn't. Because the whole propaganda about it is that Hitler hated Jews because they were a race, and this kind of debunks that, doesn't it?
Well, he believed that they were a race. People believed that at that time because there wasn't the DNA science that we have now. But they're more of like a phenotype, I guess. I mean, they do look different than other people in a lot of cases, but it wasn't about hating people based on their ethnicity. That's a lie. But he was anti-Jewish to the bone. I mean, and what that means is that he opposed their ideology. And if they wanted to say, "Hey, Hitler, I don't want to be a Jew anymore. I want to join the Universal Brotherhood of Mankind," and then Hitler would have welcomed them with open arms to become Germans.
So there was no eugenics. There was no eugenics, no incentives for like the master race or favoritism for blue-eyed, blonde hair. Is that all propaganda?
No. The term master race, first of all, what people have to realize is that this is translated from German. The actual term is Herrenvolk, which means like it's
the common folk.
It's a marriage between the lower classes and like the working class. You know, Volk are like I forget what the real term is. I don't really call them low class people, but there's like the working class and there's what's below that. So
the Untermenschen, unworthy life is the translation. Apparently there were, what was it like, gays, gypsies, blacks, people who were mentally handicapped, physically handicapped or something like that.
Yeah, he had some racist views when he was younger, when he was writing, Mein Kampf, but he advanced beyond that later on and didn't believe as much in that. But you brought up something really interesting, which is the eugenics program. First of all, the term eugenics means that which is good for life. Like, for example, you know, distress is when you have negative stress, but eustress is like when you exercise. So eugenics actually means what is good for the population. And what the German eugenics program consisted of is things like this. If a man and woman wanted to marry in the Third Reich, the government would pay off one quarter of their mortgage for every child they had. So if they had four children, the government paid for their house completely. And that's just one example. I could go through a whole list, but the eugenics program was to make the population grow. And what we have today in America and elsewhere is more accurately described as a dysgenics program, where they do everything in their power to make sure that nobody procreates. And, you know, I went through it in high school and college and grade school. My whole education was all about, you know, overpopulation, which is a myth, and, you know.
Zero-sum.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, I don't mean to dominate the show. I really want to let
this is actually good, because everybody, the subjects make people uncomfortable. And as far as I'm concerned, the only topics that are the most important really are the ones that people are so make people so uncomfortable, because they haven't actually allowed themselves to just sit back and listen to it and absorb it before. So, you know, please continue. What harm could it possibly do?
Well, in America, what we have is, you know, fluoride and chemtrails and GMOs, and it's just this constant. And then there's all the propaganda about, you know, don't have babies, you're evil if you have babies because the world's overpopulated. How could you bring children into this world? And we're just, it comes at us from every angle, and that's a dysgenics program. And it's in a stark contrast to what was going on in Germany. And this is a good measure of whether your country has a dictator or not, because if the leader is actually doing things that are good for the population and helping them. I mean, how would you like to have someone pay off your mortgage if you had four children? I mean,
you know what it strikes me as? You know, when Gaddafi was running Libya and he made these huge, awesome social programs, he was able to get people growing food in the desert, he was paying off most people's cars for them, he was giving them all the free medical care, paying for their apartments, giving them big wedding gifts and the whole nine yards. He could drive through the streets just standing up in a Pajero, no security, no nothing, just and everybody in the streets just clapping for him and everything as he goes past, not even afraid, right? And then suddenly he's an evil person who needs to be enslaved and dominated, and we need to set up a private banking corporation as well, because he's got a government one, and that's just not good. And we also need to set up a private oil company as well, and we also need to scrap that using gold instead of made up US dollar notes that are backed by a banking cartel stuff as well. I mean, because that's just not freedom, buddy. You know, bombing the people and taking control of their resources and assets is.
Yeah, dictator is just a buzzword that the international Jewish bankers use before they eliminate somebody, and that's exactly what they did to Gaddafi, and they did the same thing to Hitler.
And to Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein offered a $100 million care package kind of thing to the United States in 2001, before 9/11, to help the Americans living in poverty.
Hussein started off as a CIA asset. He was installed by them, but then as time went by, he bit his masters in the ass, and they took him out. That's what happens the second that one of their puppets steps out of line. They get whacked. But you brought up an interesting point about Gaddafi being able to stand up in his car and not worry about getting shot, because you know who else could do that, and who was Hitler. Look at any video of him. He's standing up in his car. Anybody could have picked him off, but nobody wanted to, because he saved Germany in for 6 to 12 years from the Jews, and he was a hero, and no one would have ever dreamed of killing them, and they elected him. I mean, he fought in 48 battles in World War I. He never wanted to see another war. His job that he was elected to do was to kick out the Bolsheviks and reunite Germany, and he was a servant of his people. He didn't care about money. He wasn't in it for the money. He didn't even carry a wallet or anything like that. He was a person who lived to serve his people and to help them survive the Bolshevik nightmare hellhole that they were swirling around in.
Oh, Pete, you're You're still breaking up there, buddy. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to explain why this is happening. These guys were doing some recording in a studio earlier, and Pete has to drive through a very hilly area, so hence his bad connection. So it's very unfortunate for those who called in to hear Mr. Pete Tapetti from Poker Face talk about all of this stuff with us. It's very unfortunate. I kind of feel deprived. I feel slighted. You know, but it's been quite good to be able to hash it out, and it's cool when people can argue and have a discussion and make different points and claims and be able to hear each other out without it descending into this crazy name calling abusive shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'm sure Paul.
That's what freedom points is about, sir. It's about getting people together that might only agree on 80%, but we keep them talking.
Yeah.
And then we find out that we have a lot in common.
Yeah, well, I've always said for a long time that it's the points we agree we should come together and collaborate. The points that we disagree are usually quite kind of minor ideological things, and we could possibly leave them for a later discussion at some point. Maybe at a point where we're no longer under the rule of ruthless criminal sociopathic banking scumbags who have no conscience, no soul, and want to kill and enslave everybody. I mean, you know, just a thought.
Hear, hear.
Dude, I love your scumbaggery, man. It's great, especially with the accent. It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with exposing scumbaggery, all right?
Are you serious that Barack Obama has a 90% approval rating in New Zealand, though? I find that hard to believe, you know.
Oh, dude, I was driving around, and there were like Obama 08 bumper stickers on cars driving around in New Zealand.
Wow. Well, I mean, at the time, he was really popular. But I will give him credit for one thing and one thing only, which is dragging his feet on this war that the Israelis want with Iran. I know that he's got an ulterior motive. He was placed in power by the Jewish left, who wants someone that's less conspicuously maniacal than the Likud party and Benjamin Netanyahu. They want to go for a slow kill. They want to poison their enemy versus blowing them up with bombs. However, when people bring up Obama, I have to point out that he is dragging his feet on their war, and we're not involved in an overt war with Iran or Syria. Although we are completely, you know, funding all these covert mercenaries and stuff, but you know, he's not a servant of the Jewish right. He's a servant of the Jewish left, and they should be thought of as. These two factions of Jewish power are actually splitting right down the middle because, you know, the Jewish left is sick of the right and their religious-themed warmongering. They know that it's never going to fly.
Trevor, I'm sorry, but we're coming to the end of the show, and unfortunately we've run out of time. So do you have a website or something real quick before we go?
Just find me on Facebook and Trevor Labonte on Facebook, and I also am a co-editor for The Ugly Truth, Mark Glenn's website, and another website called Mukawama Music, and I do lots of stuff. Just Google my name.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. That's all we've got time for, as well as search up Paul Tapetti and Poker Face. We'll be right back, folks.